The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, April 4th, 2008, and this is episode number 121. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to bring you all kinds of good stuff about MotoGP. Obviously, today we're going to be talking about the race at Jerez that we had last weekend. Got a call with Jules Cisek, a good one. Going to make up for last week's show, which was, quite frankly, pretty bad. But we had a really good call, Jules and I did. I thought it went really, really well. And we wrap up the race and we talk a lot of different opinions and bring you some of the stuff that if you were not lucky enough to have seen the race, hopefully we'll sort of bring it to you in a mental sort of a picture way. And if you did watch the race, which I'm sure that most of you did, then, you know, maybe we'll sort of just talk about things that you were thinking about while you watched it and all that sort of stuff and just kind of clarify what we think in any case, whether or not that's the right thing to think. Before we get into all of that, I do want to send a big shout-out thank you to Bob McCullough, who was kind enough to send in a donation to MotoGPOD. I do appreciate that. It helps pay for the bandwidth and the hosting bills and all that kind of stuff that we have going on, the Skype bill, the MotoGP.com subscription, all that sort of stuff. So really, really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Bob. Bob rides an XB12 out there at Barber, so keep the shiny side up out there, Bob, and I wouldn't mind doing a track day at Barber. That'd be kind of slick. So good luck with that. And we will be talking more about track days here in the future when we're not talking about MotoGP. So other than that, not a whole lot of front matter going on today. There were some news stories that popped up in the press and all of that, but nothing that I thought was all that super, super great and nothing that Jules and I didn't cover. So why don't we go ahead and just launch on into conversation with Jules. All right, we got Jules on the phone today. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing fine, Bob. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Can't complain. And going to be talking about the race that we had at Jerez on this call here to make up for what I thought was kind of a train wreck of a show last week, which I won't get into details on all of that, but I was completely unprepared, and then lots of things happened and stuff, and I almost thought about not even putting the show up, but then I just sort of did. So
I thought it was a pretty good show.
You liked it?
Sure, why not? I mean, you know, it's better than nothing.
It was extremely free form.
It was a good show.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you liked it. I haven't actually gone back and listened to it, but I probably should. So in any case, why don't we talk a little bit about Jerez and just I think that the pattern that we had going on the last wrap up for Qatar, where we didn't kind of specifically go lap by lap and grid by grid and all of that, we just sort of free formed it. I thought that worked out real well. So let's do that again.
Sounds good.
Yeah. One of the first comments I want to make, and I'm sure you saw this, and I hope the listeners saw it. If they didn't, I'm going to put some links up to YouTube videos. But Colin Edwards' save in qualifying.
Incredible.
Yes.
So that's style.
Yes, it was very the wave to the crowd.
Well, that's what I mean, like the fact that, yes, like, you know, that he was like bobbing his head and he's like, oh yeah, uh-huh,
yeah,
I saved that.
And what's weird is I got several links from different listeners, so I've seen at least three. I have seen three YouTube videos of that MotoGP qualifying session. And one with the Australian announcers and one with Toby Moody and Jillian Ryder from Eurosport. And they said the exact same thing, that, wow, he had the presence of mind to wave to the crowd. But yeah, it was quite a save. And the weird thing was, is we had two more like it in the weekend. You had Alex Debon in the 250s.
Yep.
And Nicky Hayden in the MotoGP race. And they were almost, carbon copies of that same kind of save almost. So I don't think they were quite as dramatic as Collins, but very, very close. And so I thought that was a little unusual, because that's not something I recall seeing a lot of.
No. Well, I've seen people trying to save, for a long time, saving a bike, and usually failing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a new trend. We'll see.
You never know. Why don't we actually, if you haven't seen it, you do need to check out the thing, and I will put links to those YouTubes of Collins. But for a real quick description, basically Colin is coming in, I believe it's turn one on qualifying, and basically loses the front, and looks like he's going to low side, and he's going down, and he kind of puts his knee and elbow down and kind of hoiks back up and sort of wobbles a little bit and gets the motorcycle back up. You know, he lost his lap was shot, but he didn't crash the motorcycle, and it was very, very neatly done. I wouldn't say that it was the best save ever that I've seen. That still, I think, the ones that I've seen, it has to go to Mamola where was that? It was Misano, I think, and several years ago. But it was a very, very good save. And moving on in the qualifying session, Lorenzo getting the second pole. What do you think of that, Jules?
Two in a row.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, are we seeing a trend? What's going on here? Is it Michelin making better qualifiers, Lorenzo being the better rider, et cetera, et cetera? What are we going to see at Estoril? What do you think?
I think Estoril is going to be the first real race of the season. I think Qatar and Jerez have very distinct tracks that, one is obviously the desert, cold temperatures on the track we had this year. Jerez is the slowest track in the season, in terms of, average speeds. And I think that Jerez is going to be the first proper, test of just how far these guys have all gotten. So
Estoril, right.
I'm kind of, what did I say? Sorry.
You said Jerez, but yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, Jerez was also, I mean, probably a lot of people were, looking forward to Jerez as the real start of the season, but I think Estoril is the real start of when we're going to start seeing, who did their homework and who's really going to be able to fight it out for the championship.
Yeah, well put. Both races are a little bit of kind of, I guess you'd say, an anomaly. I mean, especially Qatar this year with the cold track temperatures and the fact that, the track is always so dirty and everything else. It's just, that one's always a little wonky. And my take on Jerez, not only the tight, twisty nature and slow overall speed of it, but the fact that it's so, so Spanish, because I don't know about you, but I was looking for Lorenzo and Pedrosa all along. And I'm not saying that they're not going to do, equally well in Estoril. They very well might. But I knew that Jerez was going to be, to some extent, the Jorge and Danny show.
Oh, I totally agree. And, I mean, it couldn't have been built up more as that either. I mean, the Spanish press was out of control, and if you pretty much anybody who's written about the atmosphere there in past years also, but this year it just seems like it was massive, because I think a lot of people in Europe treat this as the beginning of the season. So
oh sure, yeah, that Qatar is just like another test or what have you. Yeah,
test with points.
Yes, exactly. And I Jerez is one of the tracks that I'd really like to go to a race there, just for that atmosphere and that insane MotoGP fandom, almost.
Drunk people doing wheelies down the boulevard there.
Yes. Nothing like being drunk. But I always enjoy watching the Jerez race, but I do think that you're right that it's a little bit of an anomaly.
There's a lot of tracks during the year. I mean, we're going to be at China,
yeah,
which is an unusual track also. You could say Sepang is a bit of an unusual track. So, Laguna Seca is a bit of an unusual track. They all have their own thing. But there's a series of races that I think are, if you get your setup right for Mugello, you're going to have a similar setup for Catalunya, for Brno, for Assen. Those kinds of tracks that are traditional, more traditional tracks, I think.
Yeah,
that
Donington.
Donington. Those are the tracks that I kind of consider, like, in the mid-season where you start to get kind of a rhythm going as far as race-to-race stuff,
Right. Little. Is it not necessarily, easy to predict on any kind of 100% level or something, but you sort of know what to expect based on what you saw last week.
Or last year.
Or last year, exactly, yeah. And kind of the meat of the season. I agree. And there's quite a few, Phillip Island kind of somewhat falls into that. But yeah, the other, you're right. Those, you know, some of these other tracks like Shanghai are also their own little anomalies. But that's what kind of makes the whole season, as you know, interesting, is that it's not just this series of cookie cutter
ovals.
Oh, I love ovals.
It. I think that's you know, the fact that we have another race in the U.S., the fact that despite all of the, you know, whining about Qatar, the Qatar race round is staying. I really, and despite the fact that people don't like the China track, I really, really think that if we're going to have a world championship, that it should be all over the world. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
truly world.
I think we should go back to Brazil. I think we should go. I think we should have a race in South Africa again. I mean, that's what makes world sports cool. You know?
Yeah, because it is. Stan, we talked about this last year. That it's still somewhat the, you know, not the world championship, but the European championship. You know, less so than it obviously was 40 years ago, but still it does have, you know, there's a lot of European races, and you're right. If you're going to have it worldwide, then it should be worldwide. And I agree to a point. It's not that I object to having a race in Malaysia or Shanghai or, you know, China or those kind of places and stuff. What the only thing I don't particularly like about those tracks is their cookie cutter nature.
Yeah. No, the actual tracks themselves are not the greatest. That's true. But you gotta admit that last year's China race was
very
an
good,
exciting race. So
yes, it was.
Maybe we'll see another good one this year. We'll see.
Sure. Exactly. No. There's some good race in there. It's just and they have their own strengths. You know, it gives especially like Malaysia with those you know, two really long straightaways and stuff. It gives. Well, the Ducati can really stretch their legs, and they're traditionally a Bridgestone track, and all these sort of variety of different things that you come up with that make those sort of somewhat different than some of the other races that we see throughout the year.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, it's talking about qualifying.
So the thing is, I don't think that we've ever had a rookie that did two poles in a row. That's got to be some kind of a record.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that myself, and I hadn't gone through and looked in that because I knew I could rely on you.
No, that kind of stack is a little bit above my head. I did poke around a little bit. It's definitely not in recent years.
No, I agree. Yeah,
and I even checked that you know, Biaggi pole in 1998. He did not have a pole the next race, so it's got to be further back, and who knows at that point, you know?
Right. And I think that we're going to see quite a performance all year long from Renthrow. I really do. He's, you know, he's not going to get every pole and all of that, but he'll do real well. He's going to be a contender.
He is already a contender.
Yes, he is indeed.
Second
in
the championship.
And, I mean, two races does not make a championship, though.
No.
but he will, you know, he's still definitely going to be, you know, and I said this all along. I mean, this guy's got a lot of talent, and the whole dynamic of him in the Yamaha pits, and especially, you know, you got Rossi and Lorenzo on different tires and so much of a variety of different things that's going to make this really, really interesting stuff.
And the thing is that Yamaha has built a great machine for this year. So he is, not only is he a great rider, but he's also going to benefit, I think, from a team that has resurged. So he's got a lot going for him. I think he's going to do well.
Right. I agree. And I mean, the other Yamaha riders are bearing this out. I mean, you had Colin Edwards on the front row for both races so far, which, yeah, Colin usually relied upon to do a fairly good job and everything, but it hasn't been all that stellar last year, so.
And, you know, I mean, Michelin does make a good qualifying tire, and they did qualify well last year and then not do so well in the race. But this year, I think that if it wasn't for Collins' exit out of the race, he would have done okay. And Tolson did great, considering especially that he was sick. I mean, you know, both Yamaha teams this year are much stronger than they were last year.
Especially Tech 3. Insanely.
Yeah, and this goes without saying, definitely.
Orders of magnitude. Yeah. Toseland and Edwards are both going to also, yeah, they're benefiting from a way, way revived Tech 3 and Yamaha Fitter as a whole.
And in Estoril, they're supposed to get the new motor, although I'm not sure if that actually is going to happen. I remember there was still some doubt whether they were going to get it for Estoril.
They talked about it a lot during the Qatar, you know, the commentary and all that. I don't remember saying anything in Jerez.
Exactly.
And I haven't read anything in the news either about it. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you guys have heard anything about it, please send in email MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com.
Right, if you happen to have the inside line on what Yamaha's plans are to provide these guys with engines. I want to talk about Toslin, too. We might want to get to that in a little bit of the, a little bit later in the call, but don't let me forget, because that was some good stuff in the race there.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know. Is there a whole lot of other stuff that we need to cover in qualifying other than the all-Ducati back row? Wow. You know, I mean, we had Stoner qualifies seventh on the grid, and we knew the Ducatis, that the Jerez is not the Ducati track.
Well, then, you know, I mean, this is where Caprarossi won in 2006. So
yeah, that's true.
You can't really say that. But, of course, that was 990.
But it's a different bike.
Very different bike.
Yeah. And I mean, and Stoner's never had much luck at Jerez.
No.
He's probably, at this point, I think you could even say he's almost got a monkey on his back,
yeah,
or a jinx, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, something's going on. And again, we can talk about that in a minute. But Marco Melandri, I mean, that's got to suck. You know, I mean, it's dead last.
I mean,
by a long ways.
And you know, you mentioned last week about the Marco rumors with Ducati. Livio Suppi has gone on record saying that he meant nothing as such with Melandri. Publicly, obviously, mm-hmm. he's kind of defending that position, but you know, I'm starting to like really feel like pain for the guy, for Melandri, whenever I hear him saying, "Oh, I think I finally am feeling better. Like I felt better about finishing, you know, 14th or 11th or whatever." You know,
right. I agree. He deserves better too.
I know.
Yeah. He's a better racer than that. So. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I'm not that guy riding that motorcycle. I don't know what's going on. Yeesh. Come on, Marco.
I want to see how he does at Mugello. He's always done well there.
Yeah. Now, Mugello, we've still got quite a few races to go before then, Jules.
I know.
Yeah. So hopefully he can pull it together in one of the others. But yeah, I agree. Mugello will be... basically, if he chokes this bad at Mugello, then we know that the problems are extremely severe.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Marco can be counted on. You know, it's his home race and all of that sort of thing. So he should be able to be doing a whole lot better. He should be able to be doing a whole lot better than he has been at Jerez and at Qatar. He qualified, 16th on the grid in Qatar and 18th. 18th, dead last on the grid, and that's not the place for the Ducati factory team.
No.
I don't know. It's really hard to say. But like I said, other than that, not a whole lot of comments that I have about qualifying. Was there anything that sort of stuck out in your head of things that might have happened in qualifying? Or
not really. Nope.
No. Yeah, it was just pretty much qualifying session. So bye bye qualifying. on to the race. One real quick thing about back to qualifying. Hayden was qualified fourth and got a good start in the race and looked pretty strong early on. And this is the usual Bob at MotoGPOD fandom of Nicky Hayden. but I don't, you know, he didn't have a disaster of a race, but he didn't have a great race either. So it's,
I mean, if it wasn't for one bad moment, I think he could have.
He could have been on a podium.
He could have done something. I think he could have had a podium finish.
He kept sort of edging up, but it was a little bit like, you know, he'd edge it up and Lorenzo would edge it up, and you know, he's just, and then he had the moment, and it was pretty much over.
If you're going to be talking about Sparks, then let's talk about Danny, because he had another incredible start.
He did,
and I think that's what won him the race.
Right. I got an email last week, and I'm not going to be able to find it real quick, so I can't recall exactly who it was from. But I got an email talking about the Qatar start that he had and how this listener had watched the Qatar start several times over and over and over again and couldn't see that Pedrosa did any kind of, because we discussed the sort of semi-jump start theory that, you know, possibly Pedrosa was slightly moving, but not quite beyond the painted line when the lights went out. And basically, that's not what happened. The guy just got a fantastic start. And I think he also did, again, at Jerez. And you know, does he have superhuman reflexes? I don't know.
He's got some good electronics there to help him out.
Oh, that's probably part of it, yeah.
Well, see, so I have here comes like theory time again. But here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Danny Pedrosa has not shown himself to be the greatest aggressive rider in a pack, passing people. You know, he needs to be up front to set a space. He's a lot like Stoner, I think. And like they both need to be up front to get into the rhythm. Some other riders are much better at riding with a pack.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you look at Danny practicing. He is probably the most adamant about practicing starts. You always see him practicing. Like every session that he gets a chance, at the end of the session, he is there practicing his starts multiple times. So I think that he's concentrating on that, and I think that the team is also helping him out with, you know, whatever legal means they have of helping him get that bike on their way. Because those are two races in a row now where he really got a huge advantage out of just the way he cut off the line.
Right. And if he can vault out ahead, then he's in that position that he wants to be in, which is basically in front. I think there's a lot to that theory. And we know that Stoner definitely wants to practice alone. He gets quite upset if anybody during the practice sessions, you know, he makes a huge effort to be basically by himself on the track.
Exactly. I think for many reasons. One is because he doesn't like, he doesn't like to be with other riders because it breaks his rhythm. But also another one is I do think that he is kind of guarding his line. His line is different, and he's guarding it.
He doesn't want anybody to be sort of spying on him. I agree.
Especially on the same machinery.
Right. And more power to him. That's fine. You know, as long as you don't mind, you know, that's how you have to sort of work your practice session, where you're constantly kind of slowing down to let somebody else pass or whatever. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was commenting to my wife the other day. We were looking through some of the photos I took at the 2007 USGP, and there were so many photos of Stoner looking backwards, riding slowly, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I remember that. Amazing. I mean, we were sitting there watching it and commenting on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
But yeah, no, and same story with Stoner. If he can, once he gets out sort of up front, and we talked about this last time we talked, that once he gets out up front, he's happy, he's in his element, and he's that seems to be what fits his riding style. But you know, he wasn't able to do it this race. It just sort of didn't work out for him, because I think clearly because of this jinx that we're talking that he might have. He went off at that same corner twice. Once didn't really look like there was more to it. Who did he made contact with?
Nakano and Vermeulen.
Right. And so on that one, it was a little bit more of a kind of a racing incident. But I think the other time it was just, he outbraked himself.
I basically think he messed up both times. On the MotoGP feed, the commentators there were saying, "Ooh, Nakano, you know, hit him or something, or Vermeulen hit him or something, or one of those guys broke too hard," and then he had to. No, he made exactly the same mistake. There just happened to be riders around that time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, because it wasn't Nakano's fault. No,
no. How could it be? He made the corner. He made the corner fine. If you look at that the replay of that, I mean, Stoner, there was no way he was going to be able to outbreak those guys because he was going in too hot already.
Yeah,
Vermeulen's really lucky that he didn't get taken out by Stoner there.
So what do you think it is? Is Stoner is just like so?
I think he was angry.
Angry?
Oh yeah, I think he does. He's a hot tempered dude, you know. And
yeah, he is.
He likes to be out front because then he can calm down and just turn out laps. But he is hot tempered and I think he's a bit sloppy in traffic.
Really,
I had a conversation with some people about this over the week, and people were kind of saying I'm full of it because I don't know, I mean it's just my opinion, but I just think that
nobody would say you're full of it, Jules.
What's that?
Nobody would ever say you're full of it.
Yeah, exactly. they wouldn't dare. So no, seriously, the thing is that he's a young kid, right? He still hasn't gotten all that
youthful vigor
under control yet, and we know he gets pissed off because remember, like, him gesturing who was he in contact with last year a couple of times.
Barros, or was it
there was definitely one time with Barros. There was one time with I think it was with Melandri, actually.
Might have
been Melandri on the Grissini then, and anyway,
he gets mad at press conferences. I mean,
I think the worst thing you could possibly do is write angry. Mm-hmm. And I think he was writing angry. I think he was writing angry that he got a crappy start.
Crappy qualifying position, crappy start.
Qualifying position. And then after he went off, he was really angry at himself.
Sure.
Which really contributed to his second get off. And you have to say, like, he was really riding hard because the first time he went off the track, it put him in last place, and he still managed to fight through to 11th place. And
right.
he went
quite
up
quickly
again,
too, by the way,
and managed to keep 11th place. He still finished in front of Melandri, who never went off the track. So
exactly,
you know,
which has got to burn Melandri even more. Yeah,
yeah.
But on that first off, he dropped from fifth position, finishing lap two, to dead last.
Yeah,
and he like clockwork, he progressed up the lap chart. You know, I'm looking at the lap chart right now.
Right.
And they reported him on lap three, he was dead last. And by lap eight, he'd passed five guys.
Right.
So, you know, he was riding hard, riding well, and moving up the progression. But unfortunately, going off again, which, like we said, this apparently is going to be his jinx. And here's my long term prediction: 2009, Casey Stoner's going to choke in Jerez, just because it'll be like that.
Every time he goes there and messes up, it's going to be worse the next time for him.
Exactly.
To overcome.
Exactly.
I mean, it's going to be harder and harder.
Right, right. This big, you know, monkey that he's carrying around on his back.
Yeah.
So. Other guys to comment about, though, besides Stoner.
What was that Rossi guy?
Oh, that guy, you know. I don't know why he's still in championship. But not the greatest of starts for Rossi.
No, but he hasn't had a good start. I can't remember the last time he had a good start.
No, he's never been a real, real good starter. I mean, he qualified, fifth here in Jerez.
Mm-hmm.
And he... basically kind of got off to, he finished lap one and sixth. So he'd already lost position there, but he did the usual Rossi thing and started picking people off.
I think he doesn't really have that same difficulty riding in the pack. He likes
riding the
riders.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that you look back at the history of his championship winning races and stuff like that. He was quite happy to be winning by bike length, you know.
Yeah, and he's always been strong. He's always been strong in a crowd.
I always have to go back to the race in Qatar in 2005 when he had to start from the back of the grid and was fourth when he crashed out. But if it wasn't for that crash, I think he had a good shot for winning that race because he went from like dead last to, well, he wasn't dead last because Biaggi was behind him, but he went from whatever 19th or 20th or whatever it was that year to like fourth in eight laps. I mean, it was unfucking believable. So
right, and was it Catalonia in 2005? Where he went off and lost I don't know how many positions, like six positions. You know, he went off in like, was it second or first, and lost a whole bunch of positions and just picked them all back up. You know?
And there's a Saxon ring where he starts, you know, 11th, one of the hardest races to pass, and he starts 11th and wins the race 2006 again. I mean, he has no trouble with that at all. And he actually didn't really have that much fight to fight against this time. He Lorenzo was the only one that really gave him trouble. And once he got past him, Lorenzo never really was able to get past him, although he did stick with him for a long, long time.
He did. He did. It looked, I was thinking that there was going to be more of a sort of a battle going on there than there was in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, you know, Rossi managed to finally eventually open up a reasonable gap over Lorenzo.
I don't think I've seen Valentino Rossi this happy in a really, really long time. Being on the podium.
It was a well-earned second. It's still, you know, second and
it's
all
still
that.
Second,
you know,
but no, but, I mean, did you see his face?
Yes,
he was
especially
a happy,
especially
happy
after
guy.
That whole thing where he on the second to last lap, he crosses the line and I'm done with the race. Yeah.
Oh, that was the best. That was the best.
I know.
It was so funny. You know,
he's lucky
old guys,
he picked
man.
That up as fast as he did.
These old fogies, they gotta, you know. They gotta learn.
Gotta keep count. Gotta keep an eye on the flags. You know,
Kenny Jr. and then him. That's it was hilarious. And like he was doing his interview afterwards. It was so funny.
He didn't even try to weasel out of it or anything. He just, I thought.
And I'm looking at my guys, and all bug died. You know.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
It's possible I, screwed up. But he managed to, snatch. Semi-victory from the jaws defeat on that one and didn't lose a position or anything like that. So that was good news for him. So it was good to see Rossi on the podium, a well-earned second there for him. He's had a not too fun time of it the past 19 races. So
anyway, Nicky Lorenzo had a decent, a little scrap, but it didn't last very long because Nicky had a little bit of a... Actually, you know, he almost crashed there. He had a good save.
Did. Yeah, because that was where he did his Colin Edwards signature save.
Yeah.
Yeah. And managed to keep it nicely. You know, he didn't... it put him out of contention for the podium, but, he didn't lose a position. So that's a good thing. But he was quite far ahead of Caparossi by that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say that then once you take the Honda and Yamaha front runners away, we come to, like, the also-rans.
Yeah, but the also-rans were tightly grouped together.
Very.
And when we saw on the feed, you know, the other – what was happening towards the back of the thing, you know, and every – this race was very enjoyable for me overall. I mean, the first, half a dozen maybe laps, if that, were wow, this is good stuff. You know what I mean? Then it started stretching out a little bit and kind of turned into a bit of a progression. But it's still – they showed enough of what was going on farther back that you can see, just like we've been saying all along, that there's still some really good racing going back just a little farther down the order.
And I think the directors that direct the show, the MotoGP show, are learning.
Yes.
To follow to make sure that they pay attention to where there's some really good fighting going on, because we did get to see that whole fight for fifth for
they
quite
did
a
they
bit.
They kept they did they did keep cutting away, and we saw the fifth. I mean, that was some good stuff.
Stuff,
and these directors,
yeah,
as far as I know, they're different at every race,
right?
And the temptation is always going to be, you know, when you're in Jerez, that you show Pedrosa and Lorenzo and you know, Elias if he was doing any good, and that's all you show.
And Rossi.
But no, they didn't. And the stuff we saw from Toseland, it's like, what does this guy think this is? That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is the best crossover that I've ever seen from World Superbikes to MotoGP. Like, it rivals the MotoGP to World Superbike move that Biaggi made, where Biaggi, like, you know, won his first race in World Superbikes. And it's that exciting to me. Like, and I'm not even a big James Toseland fan. Like, I think he's very dry and and kind of boring dude, and that he doesn't really fight hard enough sometimes. But I'm changing my mind very quickly.
Still waters run deep going on with Toesland, and we saw that in World Superbike to a point.
Yeah,
he can do it. He's got the stuff. He's got the chops, and some of those passes were, I mean, they were borderline, you know, too aggressive. He just buffalo his way right in there and bash fairings and all sorts of, you know, basically World Superbike sort of stuff that, you know, that we're not really all that used to seeing necessarily in MotoGP, just because the level.
Well, maybe because it didn't used to work.
Yeah.
And he's making it work, you know?
Exactly. But no, some super aggressive passes and some, you know, whoever he's passing is like, oh, you know, there's nothing there, you know, and Toesland finds the tiniest crack, the door is open, and just shoves it in. And I mean, that's who are his victims actually on that? Because
I cannot wait until those guys get the new motors and see what they can do with them. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome stuff. I mean, his pass on Nakano was spectacular. And then let's see who else was, like I say, who were his other victims.
He swapped Dovi at the end too. He was one of the guys who completely robbed Dovizioso.
Yeah,
a robbery, man. That was amazing.
Yes,
last corner.
So did Hopkins though, right there at the end. I mean,
Hopper, Toesland,
yeah,
both completely mobbed him.
Yeah, and it was like that. It was this big battle, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and these guys were pretty much, you know, sort of neck and neck.
Yeah. I want to make a comment about Caparossi as well. Actually, this is a comment that that my wife made when we were watching the race. Uh-huh. She said, "That's really Caparossi?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." She's like, "But he's not doing that, you know, hanging off bike bouncing around stuff anymore." And I was like, "Oh, that's a very interesting point, because he does look really, really smooth." And he looked that way in Qatar too. We didn't see him that much in Qatar. Because he was kind of riding alone.
Right,
But they did show him a lot more in the Jerez race, and it's true. I looked it over, and I was like, wow, I think that, you know, this may be proof that the Ducati is a real wild horse, you know, and it's bucking around, all that bucking around that we see Melandri and Stoner to some degree also battling against, is maybe the Achilles heel for those, and those guys have to figure it out. Caparossi looked really smooth. He was like the way Hopper looked last year on the Suzuki. I think the Suzuki is a very good bike.
I agree. It just doesn't have the drive out of the corners. I mean, that's kind of what we've been saying all along. But as far as sort of all around maneuverability and all that, it does. It's very capable motorcycle, and this might be something that conceivably suits Caparossi's style. I mean, I'm sure he wants a little more power, but doesn't everybody? But he ran a really good race, that's for sure. I mean, he was pretty much
basically the leader of the second race the whole time.
He did push off
some guys. I mean, he did have a good fight with Toesland and Dovizioso, because Dovizioso did manage to make it into fifth for a little bit.
Yes.
So there's like that little, you know, youngster versus I'm old enough to be your father type of thing, you know.
Everybody acts like Caparossi's like 1 foot in the grave, and he's like 34.
Come on.
Now, granted, he looks older than 34, but come on. He's 34 years old, shit.
I remember when I was 20 years old, 34 was seemed like...
Oh, 34 was old, dude. Yeah.
It was pretty terrible.
But so many of these guys aren't 20. I mean, actually now more and more of them are getting younger, but there's still, you know, there's still a fair amount that are in their later 20s where they should, you know, 34 is right around the corner, damn it.
Well, you know, I'm calling Rossi the old man now.
Yeah.
You know, he's 29.
Right, sure. I know. It's amazing, isn't it? Do you think that with Rossi, going back to Rossi real quick, do you think that he's put this Italian tax thing behind him? Granted, it apparently it's cost him a lot of money, but do you think that you know, maybe this is partially why we're somewhat seeing, you know, because he's done with the tax thing, that's out of his mind. So now we see him back on the podium.
You know, the tax thing, the Formula One thing, the all those things that I think it really came down to confidence. And yeah, I mean, there were probably some distractions with the tax thing, but I don't know. I just don't think he's the kind of guy that would really get that affected by it. I think he probably had that, like, it was probably made a bigger deal by the press than it was to him. I think that he probably, you know, had an idea of how he's going to resolve it right from the beginning. He was just like, okay, well, let's just find out how much they're willing to, you know, knock off the original whatever payoff that they wanted.
And write a check.
You know, yeah. I mean, he's worth a lot of money. And anyway, it was a huge amount of money to pay. I'm sure it was
actually an obscene amount of money.
Yeah.
I can't recall the exact figure, but it was like, damn, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the main thing is, and I don't think he has his confidence back 100%. I think that he's riding a little more carefully than I'm used to seeing him. I think that he has 2 years of during which he lost faith in his equipment.
Right, his own monkey on his back.
Yeah,
and I can see that. I'm
not talking about like his equipment, like his bodily equipment, but you know, the tire thing, I think, started back in 2006. I think that he gave Michelin a chance. He granted them a chance, but more like he was just hoping that they could. It's a tire that he knows he's worked on for so many years that he was kind of hoping that it would not cause him any problems, and it totally did. So,
right.
I think in 2006 he had already lost confidence in the Michelin tire, the front tire.
And then 2007 made it that much worse, because
exactly,
2007
exactly.
Michelin had a disastrous year in 2007. The thing is I think. Possibly, again, two races does not a championship make, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking Rossi should have rode it out. I think that Michelin has come back pretty strong, and that some of this Bridgestone Michelin difference that we saw last year, I think that gap has closed a lot.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. I still think that he made the right move, because I don't think that Michelin's going to leapfrog Bridgestone. I think that they're going to be fairly equal, and he just needed something to give him back that confidence. I think that that's the most important thing to a rider, and I think that the other thing is he just wanted to remove a variable that Ducati put in place to beat him.
Yeah, that makes sense. I though wonder. That okay, so let's say, just for the sake of argument, that the Bridgestone and the Michelin are roughly equal during the race.
Mm-hmm.
That the Michelin's superiority during qualifying is going to be enough of an advantage that would have been something that would have helped Rossi. And I think that for these first two races, had he been on Michelin's, we would have seen even better performance.
I agree with that. Right. I agree with that. But I also think he's learning the new tire, and I think that by mid-season it's going to be very different. And, you know, I mean, he's a guy that will figure it out. It may not be that he figures out enough to win the championship, but he'll figure it out.
This leads back to your whole theory, which I thought was a good one, of Rossi being able to ride through the problems on the bike and not necessarily be able to perfectly communicate those problems back to the engineers, which you took some flack for on some of the.
Yeah, I think the last bit of it I don't agree with. I think he's extremely good at communicating the problems back to the team.
Right, yeah, but, and that's not exactly what you said. I was paraphrasing that.
Okay, yeah. Because I remember even Jeremy Burgess talking how amazed he was that
he can remember every corner.
Every corner and what was going on, and not only that, but like he will prioritize things in his mind back to the engineers. Like he'll tell them, "Hey, we need to change the setting," and then when they're done, he'll say, "Oh, and by the way, while you're at it, this other thing also."
Right,
you know, like he he's very technical. He's not talking about like, it feels too soft in the back. It's more like, you know, give me a three-quarter turn.
Give me two more clicks on the suspension or whatever. Yeah, yeah. He knows what he's talking about. He knows his way around a motorcycle.
So anyway, so I think that we'll see him. I I just don't see how you could, how anybody could say that it was a mistake. I do think that he would have done better during these races, but he's not riding for these two races. He's riding for the championship. I think that if he doesn't figure out how to ride the Bridgestones, then yes, that would have been a mistake. But if he does, I think he'll do fine, and I think he's going to be a contender. Obviously, he's
all right.
Valentino Rossi. So
yes, and yeah, and this is something to be seen. I mean, has he, you know, has he left it too long? Is he too old, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And that the new tires are just compounding a problem that would have been there no matter what.
But I think he's going to have a very big, very, very tough season again.
Oh yeah,
I think that there's nobody who we could call a shoo-in for the championship.
No.
And we probably won't know, you know, six races from now, we won't know. And we'll probably have three or four guys that are within a shot of winning. Like,
I hope so.
Serious shot.
I hope that 16 races from now, we still don't know.
True.
I'm not
saying, like, you know, mathematically. I'm really thinking that, like, Lorenzo, Pedrosa, Rossi, and possibly Hayden, you know, Toslund.
Possibly.
I mean, you know,
Toslund might be able to.
Who knows? I mean, obviously Casey Stoner. So,
yes.
So you know, five or six guys. I would say are going to be still fighting out, like, you know, single digit points mid-season.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, it's a very safe bet mid-season that, you know, that it's all going to be. But yeah, much later than that. By the, you know, by what, let's say, like, by Indy, say, which is what the
September
13th race of the season, 14th race, that, yeah, it's still going to be, I agree that you're looking at that. I don't think we're going to see, you know, you might see the championship sealed by Australia like we did last year, but I don't know. It won't be a runaway.
I don't think it's going to be like last year.
No, I agree. I don't think it'll be like last year. Like I said, you might conceivably see it. That it's locked up by Australia, but realistically, although it wasn't mathematically locked up last year by Australia, it was to all intents and purposes locked up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And I think though that it'll be much more of a sort of up in the air thing right on through, you know, Australia, Malaysia, Valencia, the last few races of the season.
Yeah,
which makes for a good
championship. The thing to remember is that Danny Pedrosa didn't really have a great season until later on. You know, so I think that right now, right from the beginning, we're going to have Pedrosa, Jorge Lorenzo, Valentino
Pedrosa's
Rossi.
Pedrosa's got something going on this year.
Casey Stoner.
I mean,
he's got, you know like I think that the HRC is really stepping up, and I think that both of those guys are going to benefit. I think. Unfortunately, Nicky Hayden not nearly as much as Pedrosa because they're really going to be concentrating on Pedrosa. But
again, still, I agree. I mean, the size of the bike alone is, and you know, Hayden's just comparatively a monster. And but also look at the satellite teams. I mean, the Gresini guys are doing all right, and the big surprises are, Team Scott that we want to call them now, and the other Honda team.
De Punier? Mr. Crasher?
Yeah, with Big Crasher, yes. but, I mean, he did well in Qatar, though.
Did well in Qatar. Well, I guess he did well in Qatar.
I mean, really, yeah, he finished fifth. And, I mean, he did all right. And so he crashed one, finishes fifth, one, crashes one, finishes fifth.
De Punier didn't finish fifth in Qatar.
He qualified fifth.
He finished 11th or something. Or
you're 12th, right. My bad. And here I was sounding all brilliant and shit. But
no, that's the thing about De Punier. He was fantastic during testing, and everybody was talking about him like he was going to be some kind of a big surprise.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's funny
because, you know, like, you know, Stoner went to the LCR Honda, mm-hmm. and so, like, oh, could there be some kind of a secret route to championships? You know, I just don't find the Punier a winner.
Yeah, he finished ninth in Qatar, so he was in the top 50%.
Okay, sorry.
And also for Grace over at Formula One blog, I don't recall seeing De Punier's chest. So even though he crashed, we didn't get to see his torso. So I know that, you know, and I tease Grace about this a lot.
That podcast is pretty funny.
The Formula One blog, it's a great podcast.
Yeah, but, I really like it.
And I do like to tease Grace that it seems like one of her primary motivations for watching MotoGP is the opportunity to see Dupuy's chest. But other than that, and the way things look, she's going to have plenty of opportunities because he'll be taking his leathers off halfway through the race.
Isn't there any other better, like, decent chests in MotoGP?
You know, I mean, I haven't compared chests in MotoGP, but, I mean, I'll admit, I've seen Randy Dupuis several times because he crashes a lot and he takes his leathers off.
I think Tozen is really cut. I think Tozen is another
cut?
Guy.
He's cut? Yeah. Is that the piano player's cut that he's got going on?
Maybe.
Yeah, something. But I thought Dupuy had a pretty nice chest. I wish I had a chest like that. But, you know, I don't. So,
folks, this is the beer talking, okay?
Yes, it is. It is. And I'm going to get all kinds of email and look pictures. Like, you know, last year I got a picture of Hayden with his shirt off, all sweaty and stuff. And it's like, well, you're looking, talking about Dupuy's chest. Here's a picture of Hayden. It's like, look, I it's not like I like men's chest. I'm making a joke here, for crying out loud.
Sure you are.
So, listeners out there, do not send me pictures of Nikki Hayden.
Oh, you are so screwed.
Shinya Nakano, Christopher Mullen, any of them. I don't want to see their chests.
You are so screwed.
Wait. Any photos
I'm gonna
of Dupuy's chest?
I'm going to have to dig out the picture of Melandri in his booties.
Melandri in his booties?
Melandri, remember, like in 2005, he did the...
Those naked ads where he's like wearing silver boots
CDs,
or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything like that, I'll just forward straight on to Grace and she can deal with it on their show over at Formula One blog and you guys can listen to it. I'm not even going to dignify it with an answer. So I think we've digressed enough talking about the male torso. But
I just want to say the Vizioso really got mobbed.
We're not talking about his chest or anything, right?
No, I'm talking about the race.
Yeah, I agree. He did. But
you know what? It makes a great finish like that. I think to see those guys fighting to the end. And
that was good stuff. Yeah,
it's cool to see Hopkins do well with his chest. I mean, his position in the race. And
we're totally digressing. How much beer have you had, Jules?
But I only had like two. Okay,
but no, I agree. It was. It is good stuff to see, and we are seeing more of it on the feed,
right,
which is good. And I hope it continues. I really do. And that leads us into another thing, which
I wanted to mention the fact that there was a lot of photographs of Stoner and Melandri together on the track, which is probably a first.
Yeah, and probably a last.
maybe.
The one thing is, that's kind of cruel to Melandri to say, but I don't know. It's not looking too good.
I'm crossing my fingers for Marco. I think that...
I like Marco. I cross my fingers as well to him, but it's like, you know, dude, I don't know. So yeah. We'll have to see. What I really, really hope is that he doesn't lose his job. I hope all of that is just crap. I don't want to see him finish in last in every race or anything like that, and I don't think he will. But I do hope that they give him the time that he needs to, to show that, yes, he can or cannot deal with a Ducati.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Realistically, we don't have it so far from what we've seen so far. We don't have, like, an underdog bad team. I mean, last year, you know, Tech 3 could always be counted on because of the Dunlops to, you know, perform pretty crappily. And of course, Team KR, the perennial underdogs, which unfortunately, sadly, horribly, are not here with us this year. But other than that, you know, I mean, these satellite teams are all very strong. And I think that they'll all do, you know, it'll be up and down. You know, some races they'll do well. Some races, you know, somebody's got to finish last. You got 18 guys. They're not all going to cross the finish line at the same time.
Yeah. Although I have to say that seeing Alice, you know, down by 20 seconds
in
the race was really, really sad.
It was hard. It's that is harsh. It's difficult to see. No, I want them to do better because I think, well, I know Elias is a better rider, and I think Gentoli is actually not a bad rider. And There's something going on. They need to get it together.
I think it's very simple. I think the Ducati is a very difficult bike to ride.
Yeah, that might be true.
And then one guy has figured it out, so everybody thinks that it's a great bike, but it's not. I'm sorry. It's not a great bike. It's just that it's a bike that you really have to play along with. You
know, right. Instead suits of certain people better than others. Yeah. How about that?
You basically have to adapt to it, not the other way around.
Yeah, I think that was borne out last year. Hell, maybe Alice Dantin should have kept Barros, because, you know, he was probably about the best of the rest last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. In any case, let's see, what was I going to say? I was going to say something very cogent and clever. Oh, we were talking about the coverage and that these guys, the directors, are showing us more of the racing farther down the grid, blah, blah, blah. And that leads us into also, which I'm not 100% sure if I mentioned it last week or not, but the new MotoGP website, MotoGP.com website.
We did mention it.
We have mentioned it. I know we have mentioned it, and I can't wait for it to truly go live because – it is so much better. So if you haven't seen it, it's beta, if you're in England, .motogp.com. And it's a light years ahead of the crap fest that they've foisted off on us for the last, 3 years?
Yeah. Although they are squeezing more and more Flash content in there. It's kind of funny.
Into the beta website as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I haven't paid that much attention.
Because at least you can cut and paste text. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous things about the current MotoGP site. You can't even do standard, I want to grab a quote from here just into notes.
No way.
I don't think it's not allowed. Maybe. I guess so.
Well, I mean, it's a Flash thing, and I don't know if they're intentionally doing it because they don't want you cutting and pasting, or if it's just a side effect of flashiness or whatever. The thing I hate most about it is that it won't remember your password.
And that's right.
Yeah. There's so many things I hate about it. I could go on and on and on and on, and I've always sort of threatened having the show where I do nothing but bitch about the MotoGP.com website, where the content is fantastic. You know, wonderful high-resolution photos of every race, every practice session, all of this.
Great stories.
Great stories. PDFs of the entire results and all of that, all kind of good stuff. And videos, full-length race videos. And
stats
all in this,
going back, the full, all the way back to 49.
Right. All in a completely impossible wrapper, why do you guys have this? Why don't you? They ought to just dump it in one big directory on the website and let you just sort of browse through the directory,
So true. Or let somebody else build a front end for it.
Oh, anything would be better. So we totally digress.
Yeah.
Why don't we, let's see, anything else about the race that's sticking out in our heads? Some of the new guys, De Angelis. What do we think of De Angelis so far this year?
Well, he had an off and he had a pretty crappy finish. He's a very big guy.
Yes.
He's really tall. I think he's probably the tallest guy in the paddock this year. And
is he really?
Yeah. 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 I'll have to look it up exactly, but he may actually be taller than Rossi. It sure looked that way on the photo that I saw of all the riders standing, but he may have been a little bit standing forward. But anyway, he looks like a really big guy, and he looks really uncomfortable in a tiny Honda. So,
It might not be the bike for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Edwards had a crash,
painful.
Yes, painful.
He crashes
not
so rarely in races.
Exactly. I was just going to say, not a big crasher. It's not a. It is really unusual that Colin Edwards crashes. So, unfortunate. And it sort of looked like he was going to be able to rejoin the race, and then he just entered the pits. So he basically just rode the bike around. And of course, also Dupuy crashed out, and that digressed into the whole chest comment thing.
Well, he did get me 2 points for tipping. I got my full 7 points. I was very, very pleased. At last, the night before the race, I changed the I had Lorenzo winning the race and Danny scoring a podium, and then I switched them. I just had this weird feeling that this was going to be a very important race for Pedrosa. He did well there last 2 years. Just happened to be somebody else that went better.
Right.
But yeah, just I think that HRC is onto something. So
I can't even remember who I put for. I'm actually going to cheat and look at it right now. Okay. I'm doing two of them. I'm doing the ride on two tipping, and also Mikey's MotoGP, which I got to put a link for that. And he's got quite a somewhat more involved tipping and fantasy MotoGP that you want to talk about and all that. And I'm doing both of those.
Cool.
And frankly, I'm terrible at these things. I basically suck at picking the winners. And let's see, what did I say? Okay, so in the last race, I said Lorenzo would win it. And I had Stoner picked out as the place getter, which, oh, wow. I'm not sure what I was thinking on that one. So I scored a big 0 points. So that probably means that Jim raced past me. I was fairly happy when, after Qatar, I was ahead of Jim. And now I'm back to my usual suck fest.
I can tell you right now, Jim got 0 points.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Oh, good. So that should mean that I'm ahead of Jim.
Still.
Yeah. So where do you – I'm looking here at the racers' standings.
I'm just going to just let you find me on that board.
Oh, Christ. Okay. Jules is second. He's actually tied for first with Leonard Carter. And we have Pop Monkey and then Psycho Monkey in places 2 and 3.
Right on monkeys.
Yes, the monkeys. And then there's another – oh, that's the other Jules, our Down Under Jules.
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking you were just running two sets of teams or something, Jules.
Nah.
I still haven't found my name. Oh, there I am. Number 152.
So, yeah. It can all change in one race.
I know. It can, especially with the ride-on-two the way the ride-on-two tipping works, it's a very dynamic game.
It always goes down to the last race.
Does it?
Yes.
Yes. I like I said, I just don't have the time anymore. I don't know, you know, it was like a couple of years ago I sort of maybe it was just time management or something, but I just whatever it is, I just Jim is ahead of me, damn it. He's ranked at 142 and I'm ranked at 152. We had the same number of points. And last race I was ranked ahead of him. What's up with that, Jim? And but in any case, I don't know. I just sort of have had a tough time finding the time to do all of these variety of different sort of fun things that are out there. Check, you know, not be over and above just reading the articles and all of that. You know,
it's the dating, the dude.
What's it, the dating? Yeah, that's it. I'm getting a lot of that going on right now. But, let's talk a little bit about championship classification. Pedrosa and Lorenzo obviously leading it because they've both been on the podium both races so far this season. Rossi's in third. Stoner's in fourth.
Pretty cool.
And Dovizioso in fifth, which is nice for him. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, he picked up second air in Qatar, so, you know, what am I talking about? Yeah, fourth. And, second. So, you know, Toslin sixth, Hayden seventh. So it's going to be a good championship. It really is this year. So.
And
okay. But, right. In any event, before I painfully stick my foot in my mouth anymore on this call, why don't we call it done and let you get, because I know you have a work commitment coming up here in the next few minutes, and at 12:30 at night, folks. Jules is a hard worker, and I have a bed commitment coming up, so whatever.
Okay, ciao.
So, all right, dude, we will talk to you later. All right, there we go. That was that conversation with Jules. Hope you liked it. I thought it went real, real well. Always like having Jules on the show. He's a fountain of knowledge. All right, one last thing, too. Let's see, real quick. I am going to run down the race classification because I have had emails from people who are sometimes deployed. So they have my extra simple sympathy that they're in Iraq or Afghanistan or Buttcrackistan or somewhere along those lines. And that they say that MotoGPOD is their only source of solid information or what have you for MotoGP racing. So we're going to go ahead and cover this because we didn't quite go over it enough with me and Jules. But for the second race of the season, the Gran Premio BWin.com de España at Jerez, The winner was Danny Pedrosa. Second place went to Valentino Rossi, which, like Jules and I were talking about, looked extremely happy to be up there on the podium taking that second, and I think he did a good job. Third place, Jorge Lorenzo, doing an excellent job on his first couple of outings in the MotoGP class. Fourth place went to Nicky Hayden, who actually did also have a pretty good race, even though he sort of, you know, sounded a little glum that he didn't quite get onto the podium, but I'm hoping that he'll have a better season than he did last year. Fifth place, Loris Caparossi, doing all right there on the Suzuki. Sixth place, James Toseland, who we are going to be seeing more of this season as he goes out there and plays bumper cars. Seventh place, John Hopkins. In eighth place, Andrea Dovizioso, Team Scott, JIR Team Scott Honda. And ninth place, Shinya Nakano, one of the Gresini riders. They're also on a Honda. Christopher Mulin came in 10th on the other Suzuki. Casey Stoner, disastrous race for Casey. Never liked Jerez. Went off track twice. Hadn't had a very good qualifying position anyway. So he was, you know, it really looked like it was going to be a long shot for him to win this one. But the going off twice pretty much drove the nail in that coffin. But he did manage to come in 11th and picked up, what is that, 5 championship points there. So, you know, he can't count Casey Stoner out. We've only got two races on under our belt. 12th place, Casey's teammate, Marco Melandri. Oh, boy. So, as Jewel and I talked about, Marco's got to start performing. 13th place, Ant West on the other Kawasaki. 14th place, Alex De Angelis on the other Gresini Honda. 15th, Tony Elias for Alice team, which is the Dantin Ducati team. And 16th and last finisher was Sylvain Guintoli on the other Alice Ducati. Not classified, Colin Edwards in a very, very rare crash, and Randy Depunier in an all-too-common crash. So there's the results from Jerez. And through the magic of editing, we will now seamlessly transition to this previously recorded little bit. One thing, little announcement going on here. I have got a very, very busy month coming up here in April, including first track day of the season. So amongst that, which is sort of a bright spark in an otherwise very, very busy, lot of traveling kind of month, I'm not going to be able to do a show for the next 3 weeks running, but Jules has been kind enough to volunteer his services, and he's going to put some stuff up, so we should have some shows going on while I'm gone, but I will be back, let's see, on April, probably should turn the calendar over to April, huh? Wow, I won't be back till May, so the May 2nd show, I will be back. If I can do anything for the April 25th show, I might, because I got a track day on 22nd up there at PIR. Darren Carpenter, who's been a guest before on the show and a contributor to MotoGPOD, is going to be up there. And Fergus Caldicott also has been on MotoGPOD. And we're going to be all up there doing a track day with the Pacific Supersport Riders at PIR, the newly resurfaced Portland International Raceway. And I'll be trying out my new-to-me SV650, and I'll let you guys know how that goes. So it should be good stuff. Wish me luck. And other stuff that I got going on besides that is all sort of work-related. And my son's graduating from boot camp that same week. So I got a trade show from the 10th through the 17th. I have a Navy drill weekend. I have a track day. And then I'm flying down to San Diego for my son's graduation. And all in all, basically, I'm going to be gone from the house for about 17 days straight, except for once in a while to sort of come back and do laundry or something like that. So busy, busy month for me. So I will talk to all of you later when I come back for that May 2nd show. And between now and then, go out there and enjoy the beautiful spring weather that we're starting to get. Get that motorcycle out of winter storage, get some riding done, and keep the shiny side up, of course. And we'll talk to you later. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.